Morning, Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. The Pentagon has announced 28 American sailors are dead aboard the USS Stark, the missile frigate hit last night by at least one Iraqi Exocet missile in the Persian Gulf. Several of the injured have been helicoptered to hospitals in Bahrain, and an Air Force medevac plane is en route from Germany. Pentagon correspondent David Martin has the latest.
The Pentagon's worst fears have been confirmed. All 25 men missing and unaccounted for aboard the Stark have now been found dead, bringing the death toll from last night's attack to 28. In addition, six men were injured seriously enough to require hospitalization. There is still some confusion in accounting for every last member of the Stark's crew, and Pentagon officials say it is possible the death toll could go still higher. Almost all those killed were in a berthing compartment in the forward part of the ship where the Iraqi missile struck. The missile touched off a number of fires, and it is only in the last few hours that rescuers were able to enter the crew compartment in search of the missing. The names of the dead will not be released until their next of kin have been notified, a grim process already underway in Mayport, Florida, which is the Stark's home port. David Martin, CBS News, the Pentagon.
David Tucker of the Gulf Daily News in Bahrain told us this morning the Iraqi pilots apparently never actually saw their target.
The Exocets are fired blind. That means that the only vision the pilot has inside his cockpit is a blip on his radar screen. The Iraqi pilots who fired the Exocets last night would only have seen the USS Stark as a blip on their screens and would have had no idea what vessel they were firing at.
They assumed that it was a tanker.
Exactly. They assumed it was a tanker, presumably on the Karg Island shuttle run, ferrying oil for Iran.
Tucker dismissed earlier reports from Bahrain that the missile may have been fired from a gunboat. The White House now says Iraq's ambassador in Washington has expressed regret, and an Iraqi spokesman says President Saddam Hussein has ordered a full investigation. The spokesman said if such an attack occurred, it would have been due to confusion by the pilot. Secretary of State Schultz last night demanded an explanation for the attack, which he said the U.S. viewed with great seriousness. Still, U.S. officials stressed the view the attack was accidental. Deliberate or accidental makes little difference to the families of the dead and injured. There were some 200 men on the Stark, and in Anderson, South Carolina, Mary Ackerman awaits word on one of them, her son Tim.
We haven't heard anything. We're just waiting to find out something, and that's all. If we just knew that he was safe.
The Pentagon is asking relatives of Stark crew members to call a toll-free number for information. That number, 1-800-368-3202. The Persian Gulf tanker war continues today. Iranian gunboats attacked a Norwegian supertanker off the Saudi Arabian coast, reportedly setting it afire and causing casualties. The United States won't commit itself yet to an international peace conference on the Middle East. After meeting with Israeli Foreign Minister Shimon Peres, Secretary Schultz said the U.S. is not committed to such a meeting and would support one only if the Israeli government supports it too. There's the rub. While Peres favors the idea, Prime Minister Shamir is dead set against it. 5 days after a military coup, the people of Fiji are still wondering who's in charge, and with good reason. The BBC's Red Harrison told us from Suva, the local radio is putting out conflicting statements.
The Governor General has issued a statement in which he says the military coup, the military leadership here is illegal and unconstitutional, and he's directed the regime to dismantle itself as quickly as possible. At the same time, we have a statement from the rebel military leader, Colonel Rabuka, that he has been sworn in by the Governor General as the head of the country. His actual title is Chairman of the Council of Ministers. Well, these two statements are immensely contradictory, but according to the government spokesman, they are both true.
Earlier today, newsman Harrison and a colleague were forced at gunpoint against an alley wall by Fijian soldiers who loaded magazines into their rifles. He was then released, but an Australian broadcasting corporation reporter was ordered to leave Fiji. Today in Suva, the banks are closed to prevent a run on deposits by ethnic Indians whose recent rise to political power prompted the coup by Fijian soldiers. After Peru's President Alan Garcia ordered troops to evict them, striking policemen overnight began leaving barracks and precinct stations. They had occupied those buildings to back demands for an eightfold increase in their basic pay of $22 a month. For anti-government activists in South Korea, today's date carries much significance.
There were protests across Korea on this day, marking the seventh anniversary of riots in Gwangju. The protests in 1980 were against government crackdowns on dissent. 7 years later, the issues are strikingly similar. The decision by this nation's ruling party to virtually shut out the opposition when a new president is selected later this year. Police are on the highest state of alert and arrested thousands of dissidents before the weekend, hoping to defuse the expected demonstrations. it didn't work completely. In Kwangju, where the riots in 1980 took almost 200 lives, the relatives of the dead were gathering at a cemetery for special services. They stopped on the way in to burn a car that had a government insignia. Inside, at the services and at individual graves, there were still tears, still anger. Barry Peterson, CBS News, Seoul.
President Reagan today meets President Mario Soares of Portugal. Even here, there's an Iran-Contra connection, as Portugal was one source of arms for the Nicaraguan rebels.
This is Jacqueline Adams at the White House. After first suggesting that the president was totally disengaged from the National Security Council efforts to aid the Contras, the White House has shifted gears. Yes, Mr. Reagan was directly involved, both he and his officials say, even during the period when Congress banned such aid. But the president and his advisors insist that the congressional ban applied only to the CIA, the Pentagon, the State Department, possibly to the NSC, but not to the president himself. This White House effort to create a legal firewall between the president and his staff is absurd, according to constitutional expert, Harvard Law Professor Lawrence Tribe.
He directs the NSC. It acts at his behest. And for the president to say that my agency cannot violate the law, but of course I am free to violate the law, is an argument that I don't think we'd be taking seriously unless it were made by someone as pleasant as Ronald Reagan.
Tribe believes President Reagan may have committed an impeachable offense, but given the president's popularity, Tribe doubts Mr. Reagan will be impeached. Jacqueline Adams, CBS News, the White House.
The Iran-Contra hearings enter their third week on Capitol Hill tomorrow with more testimony from Rob Owen, a member of the Contra Support Network. 10 men accused last year of plotting to ship Iran $2 billion in weapons and who insist they had White House approval find out today if they will stand trial. After months of prosecution delays, a New York federal judge has ordered the government to tell him this afternoon if it plans to press the case. The dollar is lower in Europe after closing slightly higher today in Tokyo, the London gold fixing $476.70 an ounce, up over $6. On Wall Street, the Dow Industrials are down 8.95 at this hour at 2263.57, big board volume 29,130,000 shares. Time on the World News Roundup, 10 minutes past 7.